K-Mud Podcast presents.
Across the sea, I'm sure that you'll agree. There's mean things happening in this world. I ain't got a crying time, I'm not worried all the time. There's mean things happening in this world. There's mean things happening in this world.
Happening. Na na, na na,
There's mean things happening now. Na na, na na. There's mean things happening now. Na na, na na. There's mean things happening.
Good morning and welcome to Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes and I'll be with you until 10 a.m. And support for KMUD comes from Soham Health's Garberville Optometry, now serving Southern Humboldt with its mobile optometry unit, offering eye exams, screenings, and treatment for eye-related conditions. Glass fittings and contact lenses are also available, and they're open Tuesday and Thursdays behind Garberville Pharmacy. More info at sohumhealth.org/optometry or 707-923-3921. And I opened with the late Kleban Ali and Blackfire, Mean Things Happening in This World. It's a song, or the words were written by Woody Guthrie. He never really put it to music. And so his estate allowed Blackfire to put the music to it. And, you know, mean things are happening in this world. Of course, I think the meanest thing right now is denying people food, especially in this country. It's just outrageous. But, you know, yeah, last night put a big smile on my face when two new women governors in New Jersey and in Virginia. Virginia, the first time they've ever had a Democratic woman governor. They've only had one other, you know, governor, a woman governor, and that was a Republican. So that, you know, and I think they said New Jersey was going to be a close. No, it wasn't close. She won by big time. California, yes, it's almost like 2-1 in favor of the redistricting. But I think it's the mayor of New York, Z. Mamdan, who easy victory becoming the mayor of New York. And he gave just a rousing acceptance speech, but the words I will never forget. He said, "President Trump, I know you're watching, so I have four words for you. Turn up the volume." And I was just screaming and laughing, and then he just went, dug right into him, and it was just, you know, yeah, turn up the volume. It was just incredible, and so I'm happy that people, I mean, people went out and voted more than they did in the last two elections combined. I mean, it was just phenomenal, the amount of people that came out. It was obvious to show their disapproval of what is happening in politics right now. So I thought I'd start with this story, and it's from Native News Today out in South Dakota. And it's from Ernestine Anukasan Hopa. And she says, "In South Dakota, we remember. We remember the mailer John Thune sent in 2004, the one that showed an image of a prairie dog that read, quote, 'The dogs are lining up to vote for Tom Daschle.' It was meant to be humorous, maybe even clever, but for many of us, especially Native voters, it was anything but. That image, a prairie dog, used as a stand-in for voters, struck a nerve. For many Native voters, it wasn't clever. It was cruel. It echoed a painful history of signs that once read, quote, 'No Indians or dogs allowed.' It came just 2 years after Native communities turned out in record numbers to help re-elect Senator Tim Johnson by a few hundred votes. We had shown our power at the ballot box, and this ad felt like a mocking response, a way to belittle our participation, a way to say, 'You don't belong.' I never forgot that ad, and I never regained respect for John Thune. It wasn't just the wording, it was the timing, the tone, and the intent. Native voters had shown up in record numbers in 2002, and we made a difference. We tipped the balance. That scared Republican voters in western South Dakota. So in 2004, Thune's campaign responded not by engaging with Native communities, not by listening to our concerns, but by mocking our participation. The prairie dog ad wasn't a joke. It was a message, 'You don't belong.' But it was also a strategy. That ad wasn't just about insulting Native voters. It was about energizing Republican voters in western South Dakota. It played into rural imaginary, used humor to mask hostility, and sent a coded signal to conservative voters. Look who's voting now. You better show up. It was a calculated move to boost turnout in counties where Thune needed every vote to defeat Tom Daschle, the sitting Senate minority leader. That kind of messaging doesn't fade. It sticks. It shapes how we see our leaders, how we interpret their actions, and how we decide who deserves our trust. And for me, this ad was the moment I stopped seeing John Thune as a public servant. I started seeing him as someone willing to cross the line to win, even if it meant dehumanizing the very people he was supposed to represent. Fast forward to today, and the pattern continues. We're now in the middle of a government shutdown. Federal workers are furloughed. Tribal programs are strained. Families are worried. And what does John Thune do? He blames Democrats. He says they're, quote, playing a losing game and, quote, cowed by the far left. He echoes Donald Trump's rhetoric, pushing for layoffs and obstruction, all while pretending to stand for South Dakota values. This isn't leadership, it's loyalty, and not to the people of South Dakota, but to power Thune has become, And Thune has become one of Trump's most reliable allies in the Senate, backing his agenda, even when it hurts the very communities he was elected to serve. And whether it's voting against expanded health care access, supporting cuts to tribal education programs, or staying silent on Trump's attacks on Native sovereignty, Thune has shown us where he stands. And it's not with us. The shutdown is just the latest example. Tribal governments rely heavily on federal funding to operate essential services, health care, education, law enforcement, and housing. And when the government shuts down, those services suffer. Native communities suffer. And yet, Thune continues to push Trump's talking points, blaming Democrats while ignoring the real harm being done. It's the same playbook as 2004. Distract, divide, and demean. Back then, it was prairie dogs. Now, it's attacks on Democrats. But the strategy hasn't changed. It's about silencing voices, minimizing impact, and maintaining control. Native voters in South Dakota still matter. We still show up. We still fight for our rights, our land, and sovereignty. And we still remember the prairie dog ad, not because it was clever, but because it revealed the something ugly about John Thune. We deserve better. We demand better. And we will keep voting, organizing, and speaking out until we get it. John Thune may have forgotten that ad. He may think it was just a joke, just a mailer, just another campaign tactic. But we haven't forgotten. We remember how it made us feel. We remember what it said about us. And we remember what it revealed about him. Leadership requires respect. It requires listening. It requires standing up for all constituents, not just the ones who vote a certain way. Thune has failed that test time and time again, and until he proves otherwise, he doesn't deserve our platform, our trust, or our silence. We remember, and we're still here. Hello? All right. I believe I have Bear from Clandyken on the line. Are you on?
I am on.
All right. I was having a hard time connecting with you, and I thought I'll just put them right on air.
You actually have both of us. Agnes, you got Mark and Bear.
Oh, well, welcome to Heart of the Earth. I know I just got this call late last night from Daryl, but I knew that it was important that I got you on this morning. You know, it's so important, the work that you're doing, especially in these very trying times. So why don't you tell us, you know, why you're calling and what's going on?
Well, we're really excited to be back in Arcata at the Arcata. What is it called? The Playhouse? The theater?
Playhouse. Yep.
Arcata Playhouse. And we'll be there Sunday, November 16th, doing the Beauty Way show. And, you know, we've been talking to you about this for years, but and a lot of the folks there know what happens. We do these shows, and then we head down and see our friends and relatives on the remote parts, some pretty remote parts of the Dene Nation, where they're still facing forced relocation. And it's been, like you say, quite a year, so pretty anxious to see how folks are doing down there.
I know. I mean, with all the incredible losses, you know, that, you know, not getting, you know, their SNAP, not getting their health because of all, you know, because of the shutdown. And I know for me, you know, they're way out there, so they depend on so much. And so I just know how important the work that you do, bringing supplies for them. And I don't know how their winter is starting, but I know ours, we've had a lot of rain the last few days.
Another way to look at it is, you know, not like they need us, but we need them, because these indigenous people have been standing up against the big resource extraction companies for generations, and the Trump administration is pretty much doing an all-out assault on the natural world, trying to sell off the resources. And unfortunately, out there on the Navajo reservation, he has an ally in the current Navajo president.
Oh, so I think they're trying. I think there's, you know, a campaign now to try to get him removed, and I hope it happens.
So that's what we're doing. We're supporting indigenous people that are staying on their land in the face of, you know, overwhelming odds. They've been doing it for a long time. And we're just trying to show some camaraderie and solidarity by bringing them some firewood and some food and just the basics to make it through the winter.
Well, it's such important work that you do, and you've been doing it a long time. I mean, many, 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 many years.
Yeah, we're old. Yes.
You were young boys. Now you know, you're the white hairs, the white beards.
34th annual.
Say that again?
34th annual, this is.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So folks can, and, you know, if you can get there on Sunday, we really love to see people in person, and it helps to get us going. So again, you know, the show is on Sunday, and we love being in Arcata, but you can also hit up our GoFundMe. There's a few other ways to contribute. And just if folks don't know anything at all about it, this has been going on since the 1974 Navajo Hopi Relocation Act, where they decided they're going to split up the land and give Peabody Coal more access by getting rid of people who had been living there for a long time. And it was one of the most incredible cases of environmental degradation that you could ever imagine, just this massive strip mine tearing up the land and using pristine water from the aquifer to slurry the coal 174 miles to the Navajo Generating Station. What a horrible name for it. And burn that coal and, you know, of course, contribute to global warming, contribute to acid rain, and just incredible sadness and heartbreak on the res. So our role is to just recognize, like Bear said, we're all better off if those people stay there. This isn't charity. This is just us doing a little part to make sure that what's supposed to be happening out there can still hang on and happen.
I know it's. I was out there last year, and I mean, I couldn't believe the changes because I just knew which dirt road to turn off of, and I got up there, and they were like a paved all at the beginning, and I wasn't even sure which. I never made it to Big Mountain because I couldn't figure out which road it was. So I was like, oh my gosh, and and Tuba City was like, wow, what happened to just the old Vans Market? And I mean, I was just all the changes that has happened, but yet the people are all still back there, and they're all still in need. I mean, I don't know when. Am I wrong? But did they blacktop the road to Big Mountain?
No.
Oh, okay.
There's a little bit of blacktop right around the school, Rocky Ridge, but no, it's still a washboard, rugged ass road that you got to hope it's not raining too hard.
Oh. If you turn off and go on what's called the Turquoise Highway, there's a paved road that goes a ways in, but then you have to leave that and cut across the wash to get back over to the DeDebito Wash Road, which is one where, that runs right through the heart of the area that we do a lot of service in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wasn't sure. I knew that. The Hopi Village
Hope Villa.
Yeah, those, the road, they look like they kind of went around it or something, Hope Villa. I used to drive through it, and I'm going like, they made some changes here. And it had been, a number of years, maybe 20 years since I'd been back. So I was just in shock on the changes. And I was supposed to meet Louise, and she had lost her phone. And, one thing about phones, when you put, someone's number in it, we used to always when you dialed numbers, kind of stayed in your head. So she lost her phone, so she had no way of telling me, and I kept calling, her phone kept ringing. It was just, you learn about technology, and sometimes it was, I think, better on our brains when we were forced to remember things.
Yeah.
Another big change going on out there is that first time in a long time, they're starting to mine uranium again.
No.
Yeah, and they're hauling it through the res on trucks with tarps over it. So, yeah.
I knew that they were doing it, and they got it stopped for a while, but it's going back on again?
That's what I'm told. The Biden administration, they reopened that mine on the north rim of the Grand Canyon.
Oh.
For one thing. But, yeah, like I said, that new Navajo president is in line with Trump.
Who wants to start nuclear testing again? So that, it's every kind of bad you can do.
It's insane. I mean, it's just, yeah. I mean, I know all the years that I've, fought Diablo Canyon and uranium mining and everything nuclear, and to know that, just some really crazy person is, now in control and thinks this is a good thing. I can't imagine, I can't imagine. It's, to go there, and I know that land, and it is so beautiful. And I'm heading back there again next week. And so.
Maybe we'll run across you.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm going down to visit one of my oldest son lives down in southern Arizona, so we're going to go down and visit him. And, yeah, definitely coming through. And the north rim of the Grand Canyon, which, I always felt as much, I like it so much better than the other part. And I kept telling my husband last year, we're going to go to the north rim next year. And then all of it burned. I mean, it's just amazing what happened there. But they did reopen it October 1st through November 30th. And I said, well, even if it's burned out, I think we should go down and check it out. So we're going to make our way around there.
Nice.
Yeah. And so hopefully I'll see Louise. And if I don't, give her my love. I'm sure she has found a phone or got another phone. Yeah, she... She had made a trip to Southern California to work with some students at UCLA. But that's, I think it tells us something about, who we are as human beings. We're not using our brains enough. We're not thinking enough. And now all this AI stuff, man, that's just like, you know, we have to remember who we are as human beings. And it's when you, you know, make a trip like to Big Mountain into those areas and you see the way the indigenous people live, you know, it is a reminder of who we are as human beings.
Exactly. You know, what we say year after year, or at least for me personally, we get so much more by being there than we could ever bring, even though they're super appreciative of what we bring, and the exchange between us as people is for me, you know, as important as anything that happens out there. But if that's another thing that we do, is if people want to come along, or if you want to experience this for yourself, come to that show on the 16th at the Arcata Playhouse and talk to us. You can make the trip if you want to, and I've never had anyone go on this trip and say, oh, that was a bummer.
No.
We also have a GoFundMe account for people that can't make it to the show or support in other ways. I don't know how we link to that on the radio, but...
Well, you just go to GoFundMe and look up Beauty Way.
Beauty Way. Beauty Way on GoFundMe. All right. And what time is that happening on the 16th?
7 p.m.
7 p.m. Sunday, November 16th at the Arcata Playhouse, Klondike. Because not only do this, they're great musicians. They've been playing music for a long time. And I wish I had one of your songs, you know, queued up. But I will find one before the end of the show if I can and make sure to play it. I really want to thank you for calling. I know this was very last minute, but it's so important that we get this message out.
Well, we always like talking to you and hopefully seeing you, Agnes, but we know that you've been doing all the good work for a long time, too. So kindred souls out here on the road.
Okay.
I just wanted to say one more thing, and that is these shows that we do on the Beauty Way Tour include a blanket dance, which is a little ceremony that was taught to us by a man named Danny Blackgoat, the late great. And he told us this is how on the res, if someone's house burns down or some elder dies and they want to raise money for a ceremony, this is how they do it. And so we've been carrying that with us ever since on these shows, and it's a blessing for everybody who's involved. So that's another way you can contribute, is just come and be part of the blanket dance.
I want to share one story with you because I think you'll appreciate this. I had the opportunity to visit with Leonard Peltier this past summer, and I was returning, you know, his original Hawkman painting to him. But when we started talking and we mentioned Big Mountain, he just started laughing. He got the biggest smile on his face, and he said he'll never forget being in prison. And he goes, "There's that grandma with that rifle in her hand, just telling them, you know, what was on her mind." And he was laughing, and you know, to know that, you know, all that he was going through in prison. And here, I believe it was Catherine Smith, the photo with her with the rifle in her hand. You know, the happiness and the joy that it brought him while he was in prison. You know, it was just a joy to sit there watching him remember that and thinking about that and thinking about Big Mountain. And, you know, the way he'd kept up with, you know, everything in Indian country while he was in prison. So, but, you know, he really, really knew all about Big Mountain, and it was really something.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We will be camping and like centering our efforts out of Catherine Smith's place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mary Catherine Smith, her daughter, is hosting us.
Oh, wow.
And Marie, the sister. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. Well, give them my love, and just know that they're always in my heart.
Will do.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right, so again, everyone, that's Sunday, November 16th, 7 p.m. at the Arcata Playhouse, or you can go to The Beauty Way on GoFundMe, and you can help out the Dene people of Big Mountain.
Yay.
All right.
Yay. Thanks, Agnes.
You bet. Thank you. Oho. And again, I was talking to Bear and Mark from Klondike. And they've been doing this caravan every year for 34 years now. And, you know, November is, Native American Heritage Month, I think they call it. And So I thought I'd share a story with you from Levi Rickett about this, because I thought it was just so important, and it's really beautiful. He says, "This fall, as I introduce myself to college students during lectures, I begin by saying, I'm here because my grandmother survived an Indian boarding school. Of an introduction. It's the truth. I exist because my grandmother didn't die at the boarding school where she was sent as a child. My grandmother, Ellen Moore White Pigeon, a citizen of the Prairie Band of Potawatomi Nation, was taken from her home in Mayetta, Kansas, and sent 250 miles away to the Genoa U.S. Indian Industrial School in Nebraska. And while young Ellen survived, 87 Native children who attended Genoa during its 50 years of operation never made it home. She eventually returned to Mayetta, and a few years later, my grandfather, Levi White Pigeon, traveled from Michigan to marry her. They settled in Grand Rapids and spent 50 years together before my grandfather passed away 2 months after their golden wedding anniversary. Together, they had 10 children, the roots of our family tree. Grandma passed away 30 years ago, and last Wednesday, my daughter, artist Monica Rickett Bolter, texted our family a photo of her latest rendering. It features Grandma White Pigeon. The rendering call, which translates to the Greats, is part of the Site of Resistance exhibition that is up until January of 2026 at the Center for Native Futures in Chicago. A gallery Monica co-founded. Monica's text gave me goosebumps. Her rendering captures Grandma's contagious laugh perfectly, a laugh I can still hear. The laugh on Grandma's face took me back to my childhood when the White Pigeon family would picnic at local parks on Saturday evenings. Those gatherings were full of Indian humor and loud laughter. One evening, a park attendant rolled up on a mower and barked, "You Indians can't drink in this park." There wasn't a drop of alcohol among the White Pigeons, just hamburgers, potato salad, and faith. I never once saw them drink, and the park employee left. Grandma laughed so hard it echoed across the park. That laugh, that resilience, that's what survival looks like. Monica's next text came a few days before November, which is celebrated as American Heritage Month. It arrived one day after I spent time with Dr. Atan Truer of the White Earth Ojibwa Nation, who visited Grand Valley State University to lecture. And during his lecture, he reminded us that storytelling and memory are powerful medicines. He spoke for almost 2 hours about his upbringing and how during his youth, he never had a Native American teacher during his K through 12 years. He didn't have one until he was in a doctoral program. And he reminisced that he seldom encountered a Native American professional as he grew up, though his mother became an attorney and a tribal judge. He talked about how his mother and her law partner, who was also Native, were the only two Native professionals in the courtroom. Listening to him, I thought about how resilient Native people are and how hard we've worked to break barriers to advancement in today's society, where a lot more Natives hold professional positions. Truer also spoke about his extensive work in Native language revitalization. He said those who return to the language stripped from our ancestors in Indian boarding schools find that embracing Native language is life-changing. Seeing Monica's painting of Grandma White Pigeon and hearing Truer's lecture served as a fitting prelude to Native American Heritage Month. They both reminded me of our histories, our culture, and our truths. Native American Heritage Month gives us a moment to pause, remember, and celebrate who we are as Indigenous people. It's not just about cultural pride or recognition. It's about reflection. For Native people, our very existence is an act of resilience. We descend from ancestors who endured policies designed to erase us, removal, forced assimilation, boarding schools, and termination. Yet, we're still here. Our languages are being spoken again, our ceremonies practiced openly, and our children are growing up learning that being Native is a strength, not a burden. This month invites us to honor that legacy. It is a time to reflect on the courage of those who came before us, those who walked the trail of tears, who resisted at Wounded Knee, who survived the boarding schools, and who stood up at Standing Rock. Each generation has carried the fire forward to the next. Could live with more dignity and pride. But reflection doesn't mean nostalgia. It means accountability to continue what our ancestors started. We must confront the inequities that still persist: underfunded health care, the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people, threats to our land and water, and the ongoing struggle for tribal sovereignty. Resilience isn't just surviving, it's thriving in the face of systems that still test our endurance. Native American Heritage Month is also a time to tell our own stories on our own terms. For too long, others have defined us through textbooks, mascots, and myths. Today, Native writers, artists, and leaders are reclaiming the narrative, reminding the country that we are not relics of the past, but living nations with wisdom and vision for the future. When I think about resilience, I think of my grandmother who survived Genoa. Because she lived, I live. Her laughter, even after what she endured, is the sound of resistance. My daughter painting her great-grandmother is a testament to the strength Grandma White Pigeon passed down through her genes. Because she survived Genoa, Monica and I live. And during this Native American Heritage Month, let us all celebrate our ancestors and the strength they gave us.
In the part of me that was always there, grandmothers are speaking to me. Grandmothers in whose voices I nestle and draw nourishment from. Voices speaking to me in early morning light, glinting off water. Speaking to me in fragile green, pushing upward, groping sun and warmth, pulling earth's breath down and in to join with porous stone. Speaking to me out of thick forest, in majestic rises to sheer blue, in the straight slight mist, in twigs and fur, skin and bones, moon and movement, feathers stroking the wind, silent unseen bits in the torrent of blood, washing bone and flesh, earth's pieces, the joining of winds to rock, igniting white fire, lighting dark silence, and waking the sleeping movement caught in pollen in the yet-to-be, a waking of stars inside, and when blue fire slants to touch this water, I lift my eyes and know I am seed and shooting green and words. In this emptiness, I am night glittering, the wind and silence. I am vastness stretching to the sun. I am this moment, earth mind. I can be nothing else, the joining of breath to sand by water and fire, the earth body. And yet, I am small, a mote of dust, hardly here, unbearably, without anything to hold me but the voices of grandmothers.
And that is Jeanette Armstrong from the Okanagan Nation up in British Columbia. And I'm always reminded of how, you know, that I had the opportunity to meet her at the Indigenous Women's Conference that I attended way back when. And, you know, trying to get an interview with her was really incredible. And I did. We talked to each other on the in the airport in Fargo, North Dakota. It was quite the experience. And and she's written so many wonderful things that I'm going to find more and share them with you. But this was something good. Yes, the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, why, what a name, have transferred its Marywood Franciscan Spirituality Center in Arbor Vitae to the Lac du Fombeau Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. It is the first known land transfer from a Catholic order of sisters to a tribal nation. Photo of a tribal nation in an historical moment, they've completed the first known land transfer nationwide from a Catholic institution to a tribal nation in the name of reparations. The move is an attempt to repair and reckon with the painful legacy of colonialism and federal Indian boarding schools, where many Native children were forcibly removed from their homes and forced to assimilate. Nearly 1,000 tribal youth died at those schools, including children from the Lac du Flambeau and other tribes in Wisconsin. And in a ceremony, the Catholic Order marked the transfer of its Marywood Franciscan Spirituality Center to the Lac du Fombeau tribe. The band purchased the property from the Franciscan Sisters for $30,000, which is the original price the sisters paid when they acquired the land in 1966. They still made them pay. Okay. Quote, "This return represents more than the restoration of land. It's the restoration of balance, dignity, and our sacred connection to the places our ancestors once walked," Lac du Fombeau Tribal Chair, Tribal John D. Johnson Sr. said in a statement. Quote, "The Franciscan Sisters' act of generosity and courage stands as an example of what true healing and partnership can look like. We are proud to welcome Marywood home to ensure it continues to serve future generations of the Lac du Fombeau people." Sister Sue Erster, president of the Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, said it became clear in the last several years that they were no longer stewards of the land and that the property should be returned to its original caretakers. Quote, "We do see this as the beginning of a deepening the relationship and really helping to heal our part of the trauma." The Franciscan Sisters first purchased the land from the McAllister Resort owned by Clara Baumam, spanning just under 2 acres. The property hosts 6 buildings that include a main office, lodge, and 4 cabins. And the property long served as the provincial or regional headquarters for nearly 300 sisters until it became a full-time spirituality center in 1992, hosting guests for retreat and spiritual renewal. And while the property was never a boarding school, the Sisters ran St. Mary's Indian Boarding School on the Bad River Reservation, which operated from 1883 until 1969. And on the Lac du Fombeau Reservation, tribal youth faced physical and verbal abuse for speaking the Ojibwe language at a state-run boarding school operated there from 1895 until 1935. And that's according to Native News Online. Well, Bishop James P. Powers of the Catholic Diocese of Superior said in a statement that the transfer is a, quote, "tangible act of justice and reconciliation." And I'm just going to add in, for the price of $30,000. All right, quote, "Following in the spirit of Pope Francis's own commitment toward repentance, we pray this action will help build on a future of mutual respect and trusted relationships with the Lac du Fombeau tribe, acknowledging their connection to this land." The Franciscan Sisters worked with the nonprofit group Land Justice Futures, which helps religious landowners with land transitions with racial and ecological justice in mind. Brittany Coteles, co-founder and director of the Land Justice Futures, said the group started working with the sisters 3 years ago on their reckoning with the boarding school legacy. Quote, "This is the first time that we've seen any order of Catholic sisters return land to an indigenous nation, and it's the first time we've seen Catholic land returned in the name of healing and repair for boarding schools." Thank you very much, but there's so much more to go. To continue, Cotella said she was only aware of one other land transfer by the Jesuits, which returned more than 500 acres to the Rosebud Sioux tribe. The land had been held by the Jesuit-run St. Francis Mission, the property could be used as housing for tribal employees or a community center. Quote, we don't necessarily have a plan for it right now, but we do have a lot of great ideas that kind of focus around these aspects and growing the property. Zach Allen, marketing manager with the Lac des Fambeaux Business Development Corporation, said. And Aria Breedlove, a spokesperson for the tribe, said the group has long been working on the land transfer since late 2023. Breedlove said the transition was accomplished with respect and kindness. Quote, I'm a big fan of Sister Sue and all of them for their kindness and their willingness to acknowledge the trauma that happened here on our reservations. That was DJ Shrub from the Mohawk Nation with some help with Jules giving us Back to the Land from his CD War Club. Well, I thought I'd share this with you. This is just, it was enjoyable to read because Indigenous journalist Ray Rose's new children's book, The Sacred Stone Camp, tells the story of a young girl fighting to protect her community from the black snake. Yes, Arthur Ray Rose was at Standing Rock with her friend and relative, Indigenous activist LaDonna Brave Bull Allard, as water protectors gathered to protest the Dakota Access Pipeline. Born and raised in the Coast Salish Territory of Washington State, Rose traveled to the the camp to assist in the medical tents, advising on sometimes clashing Eastern and Indigenous medicines. Rose has contributed to the last real Indians, the South Seattle Emperor, and Mazaka Talks. She wrote the South Dakota short story for the anthology The Haunted States of America and articles for the documentary series Facing the Storm, an Indigenous response to climate change. Now, in a tribute to Allard, who died in 2021, Rose pens a heartfelt story, The Sacred Stone Camp, of how the events unfolded through a young girl's eyes as she's guided and protected by her grandmother, LaDonna, and others in the community. The story has lush watercolor illustrations by Allie McKnight, the watercolor embracing the importance of water in all things. The story is especially relevant with the upcoming 10th anniversary of the founding of the Sacred Stone Camp, which was the name of the protest camp established along the route of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and the 10th anniversary of the pipeline protest in April of 2026 that made front page news the world over. In the story, water protectors gather to defend the water and the land against a black snake that threatens the rivers that millions of people depend on. And although the pipeline is still operating, protests against it and new pipelines are ongoing. The title comes from a real place where the Cannonball River and the Missouri River came together, forming perfect circular rocks. Those rocks looked like cannonballs, so that is where the Cannonball River got her name. But LaDonna explains to young LaDonna, quote, because of the dam, the two rivers can no longer meet in that sacred way, but I wanted to name this camp after those sacred stones. I wanted everyone to remember the beautiful way those rivers came together before they were stolen away by the dam. The black snakes have been attacking other tribes for longer than I've been alive. My family has been trying to stop the sneaky DAPL black snake for a very long time, too. If this black snake is not stopped, it will poison the Cannonball, Missouri, and Mississippi rivers that millions of Americans depend on. She continues, I married into her family in 2003, Rose told Indian Country Today, quote, she was a really big influence in my life and a reconnection with my culture and community. I went to the campsite. She called me out there to help out. I would drive up there and help in the medical tents. I decided to tell this from a child's point of view after discussing the story with Penguin Books. I chose to create a child that was representative of LaDonna and her grandchildren and the children in her life. Little LaDonna is a mix of her grandkids and the story she told me about her childhood. The story starts as the community gathers in prayer to start the journey on horseback to setting up the camp with teepees for shelter, food preparation, and medicine. Rose says she wanted to capture the hope that LaDonna and the community brought forward for a better tomorrow. Quote, the pipeline did go through and many others after that, unfortunately, but out of seven major pipelines, we stopped four of them, so we've seen some progress. That's why I wanted this to be a book, to be a conversation starter. I feel like our victories get hidden. This is showing the positive aspects and the stories in the community. I wanted to put something out that shows stepping forward is important and we were being heard and seen. The publisher helped connect her with Allie McKnight, an accomplished illustrator whose art features brilliant colors and Indigenous stories. McKnight of the Shoshone-Bannock Nations grew up in a small farming community in northern Nevada. One thing they asked me to change in the book is the opening where it says, "The land is sacred to the people. The people are sacred to the land." They wanted me to cut that out, but I said, no, that is the teaching. That's the teaching I want. As a special nod to LaDonna, Rose is starting the book tour at LaDonna's grave. Again, the land is sacred to the people. The people are sacred to the land. But I am going to close out with Klondike and Good Morning Grandmother. Again, they are going to be at the Arcata Playhouse on Sunday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at night, or you can go to their GoFundMe the Beauty Way if you want to help them when they're in their 34 years that they have been going to the Big Mountain area and helping the Diné people there. This is called Good Morning Grandmother, Klondike.
Been a Kmart podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.